Chapter 6. The Unlikely Band of Merry Friends. In the training room of Ship Kurth in Luskan, Zachnaphane twirled the phoenix-shaped hilt in his left hand, expertly rolling his fingers to keep it moving end over end. A blade erupted from the hilt, a shaft of brilliant light shifting from orange to yellow to white and spitting flames along its length. Now Zach went into a more engaged routine, widening his stance, rolling the blade along one side, across before him where he let it go in a spin, caught the hilt in his right hand, and snapped it across and out wide, cutting a line of fire into the air, surely a rift to the fiery plain. Zach sent it rolling again, easy and smooth, the deadly magical blade moving in a balanced and mesmerizing dance. It went behind his back, then into his left hand, and in a circuit once and again on his left side. On that second turn, the blade elongated, drawing a gasp from the onlookers, except Jarlaxle, who appeared quite pleased, most likely with himself. And when it came up over his shoulder, it wasn't a sword, but a whip, which Zachnaphane snapped out straight ahead, again cutting a rift in the air from which dripped a ball of flame. Both fiery rifts sizzled out at the same time with a hiss and a pop. Zachnaphane's whip became a sword, and then just a beautiful hilt once more. "You are pleased?" Jarlaxle asked. Next to him, Artemis and Treri snorted at the absurdity of the question. What he had just seen was a weapon of power and of deception, which seemed a perfectly deadly combination.
"It makes my other blade seem inadequate," Zach answered.
"Because it is," Jarlaxle agreed.
"You prefer your left hand with the whip?" "Perhaps I will fight with this weapon alone. I have much training ahead with it to better disguise its tricks from my enemies."
"In your left hand, though?" Jarlaxle pressed.
"Both hands," Zach replied. "But yes, I prefer my left hand for the whip."
"Are you seeking weaknesses, Jarlaxle?" "Then perhaps this in your right hand," Jarlaxle said, drawing out a gleaming silver sword with a dark hilt shaped in the likeness of a displacer beast, and with a slight angry red glow along its fine edge.
"Cutter," Entreri remarked.
"Ah, so you planned that one for me," Zach said. "I had thought you meant to keep that treasure for yourself."
"I promised you weapons fit for your talents. You have one, and this one will complement it. For you'll not find a sharper edge than that of Kazidea and all of Faerun. You can have it now, but I will need it from time to time."
That brought curious looks from both Zach and Entreri. "You mean to have Caddy Bree put this blade too through the Great Forge?" Entreri asked. "I warn—"
"No, no," Jarlaxle assured them both. "She would more likely destroy it than heighten its enchantment, for she has no love of this sword. I do hope to make a change to Kazidea and the journey we will find before us, but the Great Forge of Gontalgrim will not be needed."
"What are you talking about?" Entreri asked.
"Our friend Camoriel has spent many long hours with the sword," Jarlaxle answered. "Let us just say that he has learned many secrets contained within, including a way that I might break the sword's will once and for all, that I might excise the demonic magic within it."
"That magic has guided many a hand to great heights of swordplay," the man reminded him.
"Novice hands. But that is nothing that Zachnaphane Doerden would ever need," Jarlaxle explained. "Ah, to have Cutter's fine edge and sentient wariness, but without its malignant bent."
"I have no idea what you're talking about," Entreri surrendered. "Enjoy your journey."
"Our journey," Jarlaxle corrected. "Kazidea ruined a previous wielder and brought great harm upon her family and great turmoil in the land. I have recently learned that in no small way this sword's malignant sentience was responsible for the War of the Silver Marches. I intend to make sure that can never happen again, and at the same time to bring peace to one who did not deserve her fate."
"Dumweel Armgo?" Zach asked.
"She is alive and lost, and I believe that using this very cursed weapon to save her will help us to break the spirit of the sword and so remove the demonic magic."
When you're done speaking in riddles, let me know what you're talking about, Zack replied.
No riddle, Jarl Axel promised.
The sword can lead us to Doomwheel. I believe she is alive. Saving her would be an act of great heroism, and more than that, Doomwheel would almost certainly prove a potent ally for us, for House Banry and their struggle against the Malarni and the other Lothians. She is Armgull of the Second House. She will be our ears and eyes.
I thought Gromp threw her to the far north, Entreri asked.
Indeed, and there she likely remains.
Likely?
We can know. Kimoriel has found a way that we can know. And so we can get to her and bring her back, pick up the sword.
Hold it tightly, send your thoughts into it, and demand answers.
Take great care, Entreri warned as Zack reached for Cutter. The sword is thick with pride, powerful of will and clever.
Not clever, Jarl Axel insisted. It manipulates with emotion, but not with concocted, thought-out falsehoods.
His expression showing that he wasn't sure what either of the two might be talking about, Zack Nefane grabbed the sword and pulled it in close against his chest. He put it through some sudden and unexpected maneuvers, and Jarl Axel nodded and smiled, understanding that what Zack was doing here was putting the proud sword off its guard.
But now Cassidea was where it always longed to be, in the hands of a true weapon master.
When Zack smiled, Jarl Axel knew that the sword was smiling too in its own way. Finally, Zack lowered the blade.
So you once wielded it, he said to Entreri.
It learned to hate me, the former assassin dryly replied, because it could never control me.
Perhaps because you were already vicious enough without its help, Jarl Axel said with a laugh, and Entreri tapped his brow in salute.
It knows my daughter, too, I have heard, Zack said. Caddy Bree wielded the blade and it got the best of her to near calamity.
That was a long time ago, Jarl Axel said. She was young and inexperienced in the way of the warrior, and trained not at all as a wizard or priestess.
In Doomwheel? Entreri asked.
Little Doe, Zack returned after concentrating on the sentient weapon. Yes, that is what her father called her.
Tosin Armgo, Zack said, nodding.
He too wielded the sword.
I do not sense that, said Zack.
He closed his eyes and brought the sword close, but then shook his head.
Not at all.
Yet he did. So tell me, who else does Cassidea know? Jarl Axel asked.
You, Zack replied, and my son.
And?
Zack shrugged.
But not Tosin, because Tosin is dead. And no others, because all others who have wielded the sword are dead, Jarl Axel explained. Which means that Doomwheel, Little Doe, is not. She was thrown through a portal into the northern wastes by Gromf years ago, but she lives, it would seem, and I intend to go get her with the two of you by my side.
Entreri and Zacnafane exchanged curious looks, but neither argued.
The northern waste is a large area, yes? Entreri said at length.
We'll find her, Jarl Axel said. The sword holds a strong bond with those who have wielded it,
and been overcome by its influence.
Kimoriel believes that any so dominated for any length of time will forever carry a bit of Cassidea's magic within them, a bond of those enslaved by it, so to speak.
So the sword will find Doomwheel? Entreri asked doubtfully.
Cassidea would not even desire such a thing, not when it can be in the hands of a warrior of Zacnafane's caliber.
Then what are you babbling about?
As I said, Kimoriel insisted to me that the bond likely extends to others who have been similarly coerced, possessed even by the will of the sword, Jarl Axel explained. Cassidea won't lead us to Doomwheel, but one who was similarly dominated by the sword might well be able to do so.
That sword never held me in thrall, Entreri was quick to say.
Not you.
If you think I'm going to submit to a wizard's trick and a sword, Zack started, but Jarl Axel interrupted him.
Not you.
No,
Entreri said suddenly. She won't do it.
She will.
Who? Zack asked.
Catty Bree.
Artemis Entreri shook his head, but Zack asked, so we three and Catty Bree are going into the wastelands of the frozen north?
Why not? Jarl Axel said. Whatever might happen in Menzo Baranzon is a long time off, it would seem. Luskin is secured. Gontalgrim is secured. Bleeding Vines is mostly rebuilt. Beniago and Brunner do not need me to intervene in their dealings any longer, and Lord Neverember is no more a threat. Nor are the Margasters. Are we to sit here and watch the world turn about us when a grand adventure awaits?
The last time you told me such a tale, I wound up in the company of dragons and in the prison of a Damaran king, Entreri reminded.
And you are a better man for it. And so was King Gareth, for that matter, and Cain, the Grand Master of Flowers. Did you get a chance to speak with him when last?
Shut up, Jarl Axel, Entreri grumbled.
I think the adventurous woman would love the chance to see the road again, Jarl Axel said, getting the conversation back on track.
She has a young child, said Zack.
And a husband more than capable of taking care of that child, to say nothing of Brunner and his queens, who spend more time with Bree than they do at governing, Jarl Axel said.
So, Drizzt will not join us on this journey then? Zack asked.
Jarl Axel chuckled. He is in no mood for such follies. Perhaps you've noticed.
Zack nodded, for he had indeed.
Besides, we will need a mighty priestess or a powerful wizard, and I tend to trust the priestess more, Jarl Axel explained. I do not intend to walk all the way back from wherever Gromp sends us.
You presume an awful lot, said Entreri.
Of course I do. That is my charm. And you know that you will both agree. So then, let me get these adventurers prepared for the road, Jarl Axel said and held out his hand. Shaking his head, Zack handed over the sentient sword. Do practice with your whip and sunblade, Jarl Axel told him. I had it specially crafted because I expect that it too will prove invaluable when we are in the frozen north, surrounded by the monsters that thrive in those extremes, and will not be pleased by the opposite extreme. He smiled, tipped his hat, and turned away.
I doubt Catty Bree will join us, Entreri remarked, even if you can convince her to hold that sword.
When Jarl Axel looked back at him, he only added,
she and I have a history on the road from long ago.
Jarl Axel only shrugged and turned away once more, but he paused again, smiled widely at Entreri, and produced a familiar jeweled dagger, tossing it to the floor before the man. Entreri recoiled. The souls within it were cleansed, Jarl Axel reminded him, and this weapon, too, was deeply inspected by my friends at the Host Tower of the Arcane. It is still brilliant, still vampiric.
Then I want nothing to do with it. Throw it to the primordial.
But the true curse of it is gone, Jarl Axel continued. Its taste remains for the physical health of the victim, but that alone. No more will it take the souls.
It doesn't matter.
Of course it matters, Jarl Axel countered. That was your sin. You said it yourself. Sharon showed it to you clearly in that wasp-filled cocoon. Now that curse is gone, but what remains is worthy of who Artemis Entreri has become. Take it, for it far exceeds the dagger you now wear on your hip, in its beauty, in its deadliness, and in its ability to heal you as it defeats your foes. You cannot deny the utility. Entreri stared long and hard at the dagger lying on the floor right before his foot. It is just a weapon now, and nowhere near as malignant as that sword you so easily dominate. The drow rogue grinned as he noted Entreri's expression. He wanted to pick up the dagger. That much was clear. He looked up at Jarl Axel.
You are sure?
As sure as I am that Thibeldorf Puent is no longer a vampire, Jarl Axel answered. Wondrous and glorious was the web of Evenel and Quenthel. You witnessed its work on this very dagger on that field. and now you know that the curse is forever gone. Take it.
And Treri licked his lips. He took the dagger.
Quite pleased, Jarlaxle nodded at that and went on his way to Catti Bri, confident that he could persuade the powerful priestess to join them, and that she would be able to use the bond of Cazadea like a divining rod to point them toward Doomwheel Armgo. If only Gromp could get them somewhere near to where he had dumped the poor woman. But Jarlaxle was confident he could make that happen, too.
Yes, the poor Doomwheel, Jarlaxle whispered to himself, and he meant it. He wanted to save her, just for the sake of doing so, for her and for her family. More than that, he truly believed that he would show Doomwheel a way to make amends for all that she had done, and in doing so, perhaps prevent utter catastrophe in Menzo Baranzon, and facilitate an end to the domination of Lolth over his kin and kind. Even if not, Jarlaxle would still go, and that truth sang sweetly in his heart. For this was not merely self-serving. He was sincere about his desire to rescue Doomwheel from the injustice, indignity, and terrible wrongs that had been precipitated upon her. For her and for lovely Cynophane, who had been played such a cruel trick by the malignant sword. Even that, he now understood, was for a perfectly selfish reason, he finally admitted to himself, as with his freeing the prisoners from Captain Arongo's hold. It felt good. It felt really good. A reward greater than baubles and magical toys.
You've cursed me, Driss Doerden, Jarlaxle said when he came out of Ship Kurth onto the streets of Close Guard Island, heading for the host tower of the Arcane and a meeting he had arranged with Camoriel and Gromph. And I love you all the more for it.
We should speak about Brevend and Margaster, Zack said to Jarlaxle when the mercenary leader had returned to Ship Kurth.
What about him?
We'll be gone for 10 days?
Months, more likely, Jarlaxle replied. It will be no easy task finding Doomwheel, even with Catti Bri's help.
Worse then, said Zack. I don't trust him.
You'd be a fool to trust him, Jarlaxle agreed.
He's vile to his bones, Zack went on. Aye, a demon had hold of him from that phylactery he wore, as with the other Margasters and their associates, but he embraced that demon.
He desired what the fiend offered, and he was not the head of his family in any case, Jarlaxle explained. If he had stood against Inkeri and Lord Neverember, even if he'd survived, what would have been left for him?
Was he really unlike so many of our kin and Menzo Baranzon in that regard?
We embrace a demon, too, because not embracing her is, or was, before this time of revelation, too terrible to imagine. I don't think our own lives all that different from the choice of many of those who joined with the demon horde in the Luskan War. And who are we to judge them?
Brevenant cooperates with us now only because of the power that affiliation offers.
Jarlaxle shrugged.
Is that enough? Zack asked.
Isn't it? Jarlaxle retorted. Isn't that enough for the folk of Luskan? Having Brevenden seated beside Beniago as a second captain enthralled to break into Earth strengthens our play here. It was his house, House Margaster of Waterdeep in Luskan, and not Ship Kurth which commissioned revenge, yes?
He likes the power. With us gone, there will be more for him to take, particularly if he is successful in opening any other trade agreements with Waterdeep, Zack warned.
True enough.
Take him with us?
No, he will stay here, but so will Camoriel be here, said Jarlaxle. I'll advise him to visit Brevenden often, right there in the man's thoughts. I don't disagree with you that Luskan will face some trials in the coming months, but understand this, as I have come to understand it over these long decades. To build anything, any organization, any city, any ship and crew worth having, one must bring it to a point where it can operate without the builder. I do not yet trust Captain Bonnie Charlie on revenge without some trusted informant among her crew. That ship offers her great power and great opportunity to abuse that power far from Luskan's lights. But I do trust that I will be able to trust her soon enough, you see. And in that event, When revenge can run the waves and do that which is good for Luskin and therefore good for me, without my oversight, then, only then, will I have created something good. I don't doubt your assessment of Brevenden Margaster's heart, Jarl Axel went on. I don't know him enough to trust him, and don't like him enough to want to get to know him well enough to trust him. And I expect that if we took him with us, somewhere along the way I'd discard him. For now, though, the play is his, and when he moves his piece, be it a knight or a pawn or his queen itself, we will counter, if necessary, in a most appropriate way. If necessary, though, and I hope it will not be. But we'll likely be gone, far away on the road in the north. As you've noted, and as I've said, Camoriel will be here. You don't know Camoriel well enough, my friend, even though you work together in the Underdark. Trust me on this. If Brevenden Margaster makes a move against Beniago and Bregan d'Irth while we are on the road, and Camoriel holds Luskin, then Brevenden will wish that he had waited for my return. Yes, I am not above killing my enemies. Camoriel does much worse than that. He'll serve the fool to a hive of illithids for their dining pleasure. Zack smiled and shuddered. He couldn't help it. He knew that Jarl Axel wasn't lying. He also wasn't overly sad about the prospect Jarl Axel had just painted, as he truly despised that particular man. Now come along, Jarl Axel said. Let us find Artemis and gather our gear. We'll be going to Gromp in the morning, I expect. Summer is running long, and we'll want to be done with our business in the far north and back before autumn sets in. Caddy Bree is really coming? Jarl Axel shrugged. I do believe so. She understands all that is at stake, and while our own concerns for Manzo Barrenzon likely weigh more heavily upon us, the idea of both saving Dumwil and forever removing such dominating powers from the sword you carry that she so hates weigh more heavily upon her. If not, if she decides against the adventure, we'll take Dabne, since we'll need a priestess. But then our journey may prove much longer still, since our link to Dumwil through Kazidea will be lost to us. I held the sword again, Caddy Bree told Drizzt. I asked Kazidea about her. I believe that Jarl Axel is correct. Dumwil is alive.
It would have to be an elaborate ruse to fool both you and Jarl Axel, I expect, Drizzt said, nodding.
He lowered his eyes, reflecting on Dumwil and her tragic tale. He knew Sinifane quite well, and had known Tosin Armgo in those days when Tosin lived in the Moonwood with the elves. He had watched their family grow from afar, thinking it a good thing, a hopeful joining, and perhaps a vision of a better future. And then so abruptly it had all ended in tragedy, with a son murdered by the runaway daughter and Sinifane betrayed.
So she is alive, perhaps, Drizzt said. Why is that a concern for Jarl Axel?
Because she is of House Barrison del Armgo, and will want a chance at redemption. Jarl Axel thinks her a critical ally in working his will upon Menzo Barrenzon.
Drizzt replied, pondering the possibilities.
He knew well that Jarl Axel survived and thrived through information and informants. It would be a good thing, would it not? Caddy Bree asked him. If Dumwil so terribly sinned because of Kazidea, is she not worth saving?
Of course she is. But could you not spend your days instead wandering the alleyways of Luskin and healing the sick and the poor?
This could avert a war.
If Jarl Axel believes that, who am I to disagree? This is his area of expertise, after all.
And there is something else. Something personal, Caddy Bree admitted. Jarl Axel has had the sword's mysteries studied extensively. He sees the rescue of Dumwil as a way to defeat the malice within Kazidea.
So it is personal to you?
I can't deny.
Throwing it into the primordial pit seems an easier course.
Jarl Axel wishes the sword for your father.
Jarl Axel has an answer for everything, Drizzt warned. He has found a benefit for you, a benefit for Zaknafane, a benefit for Dumwil, obviously, and
a great benefit for Menzo Barrenzon, in the hopes that Lolth is at last pushed aside.
Drizzt nodded.
Again, I am not one to argue with Jarl Axel about something such as that. But you don't seem convinced. Driz shrugged and held his hands out helplessly. Even for all of that, it seems a long and difficult journey. Do you believe that this is the full story of why Jarl Axel would go to such lengths? Caddybri laughed at that. I do not. Or at least, I would not be surprised if there is more. I've been looking about for ulterior reasons. This is, after all, Jarl Axel we are talking about. Is there ever only one reason for him? Or only three reasons, as you have outlined, and particularly when they are so obvious and openly stated by that ever-mysterious rogue? Do you have any thoughts on that? Who can say? As you said, it is Jarl Axel. He means to go and find her, Caddybri explained. Tomorrow to Luskan to prepare, and then to the far north a few days hence. And he thinks I am the living rod of divination who can locate her, and so he has begged me to accompany him. That could be an extended journey. What will we do with Bri? Not we, Caddybri replied. He asked me to accompany him. Ah, Driz said. Just you two in the wilds of the north? Or Zaknafane too, perhaps? Your father, yes, and one other, she paused, then added, Artemis and Treri. Another who has wielded Khazad-dûm, as have I, Driz remarked. That's a formidable group of four. What of Wulfgar, who knows the north as well as any? I can only magically recall a small group back to the south, should we find Umwil, who is perhaps not alone. Jarl Axel prefers to keep the party within those limits. Driz nodded. It made sense. Are you going? I am here to discuss that very thing, obviously. The choice is yours. But how do you feel about it? Driz shrugged. I'll be terribly lonely. But Bri and I are surrounded by friends. He gave a little laugh. You were absent from most of the excitement of the demon war, as you cared for the unborn Bri. Could it be that my dear wife misses the road of adventure? Are you bored, my love? Caddybri's smile was so complete that her eyes seemed to be laughing. You don't bore me, she said. But, she laughed aloud. Yes, she admitted. I miss the road. I miss the adventure. I miss the danger. Does that make sense? Does that make me a terrible parent? Haven't we had this conversation the other way? Driz said, laughing too. He opened his arms and let Caddybri fall into them. And this seems a noble cause for Sinophane and her daughter, and for Menzo Berenzon, perhaps. That I cannot deny. Besides, he added, pushing her back a bit and giving a wry smile, Khazad-dûm is well deserving of your revenge. He pulled her back in tight and kissed the side of her head. Your mood is much improved, she said, returning the hug. Someone reminded me. Of what? Caddybri asked. Of why? Driz corrected. And he grinned and crushed her in a tighter hug still. Do you have any advice to me regarding my companions? She whispered in the midst of the great hug. Trust them, as you would trust the companions of the hall. Even Artemis and Treri? Driz pushed her back to arm's length. You tell me. Caddybri nodded. It is strange to me that I know I can trust that man. Strange and hopeful, in the wider sense. A belief in redemption is the most important spice in hoping to cook a better tomorrow, Driz told her. Maybe that's why Jarl Axel really wants to go to the north. Even beyond the hopes for Menzo Berenzon, maybe Jarl Axel desires to offer such a chance to Dumwheel Armgo. But not just for her. Caddybri said, catching on. And Driz nodded. For Jarl Axel, because he wants to see such a thing. He wants to feel such hope. So, tomorrow? She nodded. I leave for Luskan tomorrow, but Jarl Axel thinks we will be several days there preparing for our journey. Driz spent a moment composing himself, then said, Go and tell Bri. And take your time saying goodbye. And then, my love, we'll spend the rest of the night saying farewell to each other. She grabbed Driz by the cheeks and stared into his lavender eyes. I will come back,
she promised.
I know.
And you will be here? Or at the Monastery of the Yellow Rose?
There, I think.
I'm going to leave right after you are gone, through the gates, but to Mithril Hall and then Adbar and the road to the east, with Bree. I'm not sure I need to speak with Cain now, but I find that I want to.
And you want him and the others to meet Bree?
There is that, he admitted. Do we agree?
Caddy Bree nodded and kissed him, then whispered in his ear, And when I return, I will take her to magical gardens dedicated to Mialiki.
That was 4 years ago, Gromp reminded Jarlaxle and the others. But it was your portal, Jarlaxle replied.
Yes, created only to be rid of that troublesome Darthir.
Half-elf, half-drow, Jarlaxle reminded him, for Doomwheel wasn't only Darthir, the pejorative of the dark elves used for their surface cousins.
I don't care, and I didn't care then, which is why I cast her out.
To the north?
Yes.
A mile? 10? 100? Have you gathered any thoughts on the matter as I implored you?
She landed on the slopes of the northernmost mountains in the spine of the world, the former archmage of Menzo Baranzon replied. That is my best recollection of the scene on the other side of the portal.
Jarlaxle looked at his traveling companions.
That will have to do, then, he said to Nods.
4 years, Gromp reiterated. She is likely dead. But if not, then she could be anywhere. In the Underdark, in Waterdeep, in Kalimport, in the far south even.
I don't believe so, Jarlaxle said. My investigations with Cassiodeia make me believe that she's still up there somewhere.
To what end? Why do you care?
To cleanse the sword.
Enough of your lies, said Gromp. Throw the thing into the primordial pit in Gontalgrim and be done with it. Then hire the proper wizards and blacksmiths to make another just like it, but without the demonic sentience. There, a far easier course.
But not the one we've chosen. Will you replicate the portal for us as you agreed?
Why do you care? The wizard demanded again.
Jarlaxle stood with hands on hips, staring at him.
Because she is Armgo, Gromp finally realized. You think to make her a spy for us in Menzo Baranzon.
More than a spy, likely.
Dumwheel will have the ear of the Barrison del Armgo nobles, and they will have no idea that she is not who they believe her to be, for it was the sword and not her heart driving her. Through her, we can manipulate the information filtering to Matron Mez Barris.
If you believe that, you're a bigger fool than I already suspected, and that is a high hurdle indeed.
You deny that she would be useful?
I doubt that her use would be worth all of this trouble.
Trouble for us, though, and not for Gromp. Not really.
Gromp scoffed at him and shook his head, but after a few snorts of derision aimed Jarlaxle's way, he did begin his spellcasting. A few minutes later, a swirling cloud appeared at the side of the room, framing a distant vista as if it were a picture, a mountainside thick with snow. Jarlaxle tossed the final payment, a bag of expensive and hard-to-find spell components, to Gromp. With the tip of his hat to the mighty archmage, Jarlaxle then led the way, stepping into that picture, passing through the image and onto the mountainside, to find himself standing atop deep snow beneath a crisp blue sky, with a line of fast-streaming dark clouds creating a stark and beautiful contrast. He didn't see an animal, not even a bird in the sky, and not a tree or a plant, and didn't hear a sound, except the threatening whisper of the very cold wind.
Had Cassiodeia deceived him, he wondered, and wondered, too, if he should ask Caddy Bree to immediately cast her magical recall and return them to the south.